Thanks, Freddie. Okay, today was in the way. today we're looking. I don't want it there. Oh dear. Oh well. We're looking at the story of Bartimaeus, and it's part of our series in Mark, and if you haven't worked this out already, but over the past year, and if you follow right the way up to Easter, we will have preached through, I think, the whole of the Gospel of Mark. So that's quite a good resource. It's on the website. If you are reading through Mark and you come across a bit and you think, I want to reflect a bit more on that, you could go to the website and get a sermon on it. But we're looking at Bartimaeus, and I think that Bartimaeus is one of the great heroes of the New Testament. Because Mark, when he writes about Bartimaeus, he holds Bartimaeus up as an example for us on how to respond to Jesus. So imagine the scene. Jesus is going through Jericho. He is on his way to Jerusalem for Passover. Now, Jericho is a lovely place. Now, this is a photograph that I took of it about 20 years ago now, but I've been there a few times. And it's down in the Jordan Valley, next to the Jordan. It's called, in the Bible, it's called the City of Palms. I wonder why that would be. And it's got quite a pleasant climate, and it's a very nice place, quite different to Jerusalem, which is kind of hot and dusty. And in Jesus' day, I suspect that it probably would have been quite affluent, quite kind of middle class, very respectable. And in Jericho, there lived quite a lot of priests. Around the time of Jesus, there would have been 20,000 priests who served on rotation at the temple. And quite a few of them lived in Jericho because it was just far enough away that you could commute to Jerusalem, but also far enough away for you to feel properly away from work when you came home. And so a lot of priests lived in Jericho. Many of them, at Passover, they weren't on rotation, of course, because at Passover, all of them had to go up to the temple at Jerusalem. And they wouldn't have left as yet when Jesus was passing through, but they would have all been getting ready to leave for Jerusalem. Now, Jericho is about 15 miles from Jerusalem, and the oral law, their tradition, said that any man living within 15 miles from Jerusalem had to attend Passover. It was mandatory. And Jericho was right on the rim of that requirement. Now, of course, many of the people in Jericho didn't do that. They just disobeyed that requirement. But because that was there, they took the whole thing of going up to Jerusalem very seriously, and they would all have come out of their houses to wish the pilgrims well, Godspeed on their way up to Jerusalem. So there would have been this kind of festival, fiesta-type feel to the city at the time. And it says there, Jesus and his disciples, together with a large crowd, were leaving the city. So you imagine the scene there in Jericho. And Jesus was going through, heading off towards Jerusalem. Now, Jesus was a wandering rabbi, and he had a group of disciples, and that was a common sight in Israel at the time, that rabbis would take their disciples with them. And what they would do is they would teach their disciples on the way through discourse. And so we actually have an example of that in the New Testament, where Jesus on the road to Emmaus after he'd risen from the dead, he has this discourse with a couple of disciples. And that was a common feature. It was their main way of teaching, that they would speak to their group of disciples while they walked. And so we imagine that this was going on. Jesus was chatting to his disciples, and then suddenly he is interrupted by shouting. Now, this was very rude. He was interrupting the rabbi. It was poor form. And what's more, it was a blind man, a beggar, who was causing this disturbance and shouting out, "Jesus, Son of David, have mercy on me." And of course, they tried to hush him up. This was not appropriate behavior. But he just shouted all the louder, "Son of David, have mercy on me." And Jesus asked him to be called over. Bartimaeus jumps up, tosses his cloak aside, and he comes to Jesus. And then Jesus asks him an extraordinary question. He says, "What do you want me to do for you?" Now, to understand this question properly, we have to just backtrack a little bit, because this is not the first time that Jesus has asked this question. In fact, this question is an exact repeat of a question that Jesus asked just 15 verses earlier. On that occasion, verse 35, James and John, the sons of Zebedee, came to Jesus. "Teacher," they said, "we want you to do for us whatever we ask." And Jesus replied, "What do you want me to do for you?" Same question. Identical question. And their answer was, "Let one of us sit at your right and the other at your left in your glory." And Jesus says, "You don't know what you're asking." Now, James and John were part of the hand-picked inner group of Jesus, his disciples, who he was teaching and training and discipling and raising up to be his successor. In fact, they were even more than that, because there were 12 disciples, but within the 12 disciples there was an inner circle. And James and John were in that inner circle. We read elsewhere that John was described as the disciple who Jesus loved. He was like Jesus' best friend. And here they are, the hand-picked inner circle of Jesus, and they are exposed as being merely out for status and self-aggrandizement. And now, just 15 verses on, we have a beggar and a blind man. And understand that in those days, a blind man would have been viewed as somebody who was a sinner, who was cursed by God. A blind man, the dregs of society, making a nuisance of himself. And Jesus asks him the same question. "What do you want me to do for you?" Now, who's blind here? Is it Bartimaeus who's blind? Or is it James and John? Is it the beggar or the privileged? It reminds me of that verse in Revelation 3, where it says, "You say, I am rich. I have acquired wealth. I do not need for a thing. But you do not realize that you are wretched, pitiful, poor, blind, and naked." Well, let's look at Bartimaeus, because I think Bartimaeus has a number of qualities that we could learn from him. First of all, Bartimaeus is persistent. They try to shut him up, don't they? They try to shut him up. He won't be silenced. He'd heard that Jesus was coming through. He's utterly determined to get to Jesus, utterly determined to get Jesus' attention. "Son of David, have mercy on me." He won't be silenced. Now, Jesus, in another place, he teaches on perseverance in Luke 18. And let me just read a little bit of Luke 18 to you. "Then Jesus told his disciples a parable to show them that they should always pray and not give up. He said, 'In a certain town there was a judge who neither feared God nor cared what people thought. And there was a widow in that town who kept coming to him with her plea, "Grant me justice against my adversary." For some time he refused. But finally he said to himself, "Even though I don't fear God or care what people think, yet because this widow keeps bothering me, I will see that she gets justice so that she won't eventually come and attack me." And the Lord said, "Listen to what the unjust judge says. And will not God bring about justice for his chosen ones who cry out to him day and night? Will he keep putting them off? I tell you, he will see that they get justice, and quickly. However, when the Son of Man comes, will he find faith on earth?" Bartimaeus, he just persisted. He just kept going. Now, some of us here, we've almost given up. We haven't completely given up, otherwise you wouldn't be here, God bless you. But you've almost given up. Your faith is hanging from a thread. Never give up. Never give up. You just keep persevering. Keep pressing in. January last year, St. Bees launched the N12 Community Choir. And you've probably all heard of it. It's run by Joe Dore and Chris Alexander. And it's a community choir, and I hear about it because my wife goes to it, and they sing like choirs do. It was launched in January, and for 8 months, it got going, but it didn't really get going. And by the summer, they had never got more than 12 people, and often they were in single figures. And it's very difficult to get a choir that sounds like a choir when you've got so few. And they were at the point of giving up. And it wasn't because it wasn't, Joe is a fantastic choir master, and Chris is a terrific enthusiast, but they just couldn't get it going. But they kept going. They kept going. They nearly gave up, but they didn't. They kept going. Joe, sitting over there, how many people were at the N12 Community Choir this week? 41. Perseverance. You know, that didn't come easy. That didn't come easy. We just keep going. Bartimaeus, a blind beggar. His situation could not have been worse. But he was not going to be cowed by his circumstances. With incredible courage, he kept crying out. Persistence. Secondly, he was eager. He was eager. Throwing his coat, his cloak aside, he jumped to his feet and came to Jesus. This man, he jumps up. He is not worried about what people think. He has no dignity about him. He is reckless. He's a blind man. Blind men shouldn't be jumping about. But he couldn't care less. He is going to get to Jesus no matter what. He's crazy for getting to Jesus. He casts his cloak aside. Now, a blind beggar's cloak was what he laid out on the floor for people to throw their coins into. That was his means of income. And in order to get to Jesus, he just throws it aside. I imagine the clatter of coins as this man recklessly heads off to Jesus. He gives up everything to get to Jesus. A couple of weeks ago, we had Andre Radmel come and speak from John 4 on the Samaritan woman at the well. And he identified something from that text that I had never seen before, even though I've preached on it a dozen times. That when the woman had encountered Jesus and went off to get everybody from her village, she dropped her water jar. She just cast her water jar aside. The thing that she had gone to the well for, the whole means of getting water, it was irrelevant anymore. Her old life, it was irrelevant. Bartimaeus does the same thing here. He throws his cloak to one side. His old life, it doesn't matter anymore. He's going to Jesus. Here is a blind man looking forward. Now, there are plenty of others who said that they would follow Jesus. In fact, in Luke 9, we have an account of one after another of people who were going to follow Jesus. Let me read it to you. As they were walking along, a man said to Jesus, "I will follow you wherever you go." And Jesus replied, "Foxes have holes, the birds of the air have nests, but the Son of Man has nowhere to lay his head." He said to another man, "Follow me." But he replied, "Lord, first let me go and bury my father." And Jesus said, "Let the dead bury their own dead, but you go and proclaim the kingdom of God." Still another said, "I will follow you, but first let me go and say goodbye to my family." Jesus replied, "No one who puts his hand to the plow and looks back is fit for service in the kingdom of God." And it's quite severe, isn't it? It's quite harsh, Jesus is being here. He's saying, you've got to give up everything. You've got to cast aside your cloak. You've got to drop your water bottle. You've got to forget about your old life if you're going to follow me. Let me ask you, what has your faith cost you? How much value do you place on your relationship with Jesus Christ? Is it, it certainly cost you something. It cost you a bit of time. Come to church on a Sunday morning, that cost you a couple of hours a week. Cost you some money because you give to support the ministry of the church. So it's costing you time and money, but how is it like a kind of hobby that you spend a bit of your money on and you spend a bit of your time on as sort of a thing that you do on the side? Or is it worth more than that? How eager are you? How eager? Over the years, I've interviewed dozens and dozens of people for jobs at St. Barnabas. And I find it really difficult because the people who come to interview, once they've broken through the shortlist, they're all really good. And when I meet them, I think they're fantastic. I always judge them against myself. And so I find it really difficult. But one of the things that I always look for is how eager are you? You know, why did you apply for this job? Well, I needed a job. Okay, that's not really going to cut it, is it? Or I remember one person we asked, what do you think in your dreams you're going to be doing in 5 or 10 years' time? I'll never forget her answer. She said, well, I'm going to be doing this job. She just kind of couldn't wait, her eagerness. Joshua Kane, who's doing the AV for us this morning, is often up here leading worship. If you know Joshua, when he arrived at St. Barnabas, it was kind of like a mini explosion, really, because he was so eager, he was so enthusiastic. You just throw stuff at him, and he gobbled it all up, and he's actually not stopped since. He's irrepressible, and that's infectious. And I see that kind of dynamic in Bartimaeus. He doesn't say that he'll do it. He just acts on it. No cost is too much. In fact, he doesn't give cost the slightest attention. Not a thought goes through his head about how much it's going to cost. He's going to get to Jesus no matter what. He's eager. Thirdly, he's resolute. What do you want me to do for you? Jesus asks him. The blind man said, Rabbi, I want to see. There's no doubt in his mind. He knows what he wants. There's no denial. He knows he's in need. He knows he's in a desperate situation, and he's prepared to name it. How many of us just cover over our need, saying, oh no, I don't really want to admit that I'm in a bit of trouble? No, this is honesty for you. And it is surprisingly rare quality. Somebody knows what he wants and is prepared to name it. Now, I'm going to play you a piece of music now, which I think is really profound. I'm playing it with you not because I necessarily like it, but the lyrics of this music are a paraphrase of Jesus' question to Bartimaeus. And so I think it's very thought-provoking and profound. Can we play that music now?
Yo, I'll tell you what I want, what I really, really want. Don't tell me what you want, what you really, really want. I'll tell you what I want, what I really, really want. Don't tell me what you want, what you really, really want. I wanna really, really, really wanna zig a zig. If you run
that, I think that's enough, isn't it? But tell me what you want, what you really, really want. What do you want, says Jesus? What do you want? How would you answer that question? Do you want, you know, deep down, do you want power and status like James and John wanted? Do you want money? Lots of people want money, like Judas Iscariot wanted. Do you want a quiet life? Go off on, laze around on some sandy beach. Do you want sex? Do you want a husband or a wife or kids? Do you want to make a name for yourself? Or is there something else? Something so deep, so in our depth of our soul that we hardly know what it is. Comes deep from within, a longing that's down there somewhere. What is that for you? Jesus is asking. He's asking, what do you want? What do you want? Bartimaeus knew what he wanted. What do you want? Finally, Bartimaeus was a man of faith. Bartimaeus called out, "Son of David, have mercy on me." Now, the Son of David is a messianic title. He was declaring Jesus as the Messiah. Now, the disciples had been with Jesus for 3 years at this point, and they just spent all their time with him, every day, walking the roads, seeing Jesus do the miracles, feeding the 5,000, walking on the water. They'd been with him in the boat. They'd been with him on the hills. They'd been with him in the synagogues. And a little while before this incident, Jesus had come to them in a place called Caesarea Philippi and said, "Now, who do you say that I am?" And they'd say, "Oh, well, some people say that you're Elijah, and some people say that you're John the Baptist, and some people say you're one of the prophets," and Jesus pins them down and says, "No, who do you say that I am?" And at that point, Peter blurts out, "You are the Messiah." You see, after 3 years, finally the penny drops and Peter gets it. And then they come down to Jericho and there's a blind beggar at the side of the road who's never met Jesus and he gets it straight away. This is faith. He's already put his complete trust into Jesus before he's even met him. And when Jesus goes on and heals Bartimaeus, gives him his sight, he says to him, "Go, your faith has made you well. Your faith has healed you." It's almost as if Jesus credits Bartimaeus with the healing. He says, "Look, you did it all by yourself." Now, I believe at its heart, faith is not just having believing-type feelings, although those help. Faith is evidenced by action. How do we know that Bartimaeus had faith? Well, because he was the crazy man who started shouting, "Son of David, have mercy on me." He leapt up and threw his cloak aside. He didn't have a care for what other people thought. He was prepared to do anything, give anything up, just to get to Jesus. That is faith. Faith is evidenced by action. You know, I know the people who have got faith, because I see it in their lives, the way they live it out. Faith has to be lived out. As Paul puts it in Philippians 3, forgetting what is behind and straining towards what is ahead. I press towards the goal to win the prize for which Christ has called me heavenwards. At the end of the parable of the persistent widow that I read to you earlier, Jesus says, almost wistfully, when the Son of Man comes, will he find faith on earth? What is Jesus saying there? He's saying, will I find people in church? I don't think so. He's saying, will I find an expression of Christianity? No, I don't think so. I think he's saying, will I find people who are living it out? That their lives show that they are following Jesus. So Bartimaeus is a great inspiration to us. He was persistent, he was eager, he was resolute, and he had this incredible faith that he lived it out. In a moment, we are going to take communion together. Aaron, where are you? Do you want to come up? We're going to take communion together. Simple tokens of bread and wine. And in John 6, Jesus said, I am the bread of life. Whoever comes to me will never go hungry, and whoever believes in me will never be thirsty. So when you come up to receive communion, come up to receive the bread of life. The thing that you live for. The thing that sustains you. The nourishment for your soul. The desire above all other desires that you crave. The thing that you really, really want. As you come, in your own heart, articulate what that thing is. What is it you really, really want? And then we will give you a piece of bread to symbolize the bread of life for you. Let's pray, shall we? Shall we stand? Lord, forgive us that we have been so distracted that we forget what's ultimately important. And so we now come back to you, the author and perfecter of our faith. And we come to you and bear our hearts before you. We want to say to you what we really, really want, our heart's desire. We come to you, Lord.